reminding myself that, you know, I am more than a body, and my body is the least interesting thing about me. And I don't need to be a certain size in order to be a great athlete.
Hey there, you're listening to Virago Pod, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and improving the physical and mental health of female athletes everywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by the Virago Project, a nonprofit organization that helps female athletes balance sports with life.
I'm your host, Emily McGee Zaslowski.
And I'm your co-host, Taylor Tracy. Let's jump right into the episode.
Hi, Virago Warriors, and welcome back to episode 24 of Virago Pod. On today's episode, we have current athlete Kira of the Instagram account Kira's Good Eats joining us to talk about her ability to not let her struggles define her as a person. I do want to let our listeners know that on today's episode, Taylor and Kira both talk about recovering from their eating disorders. So if you're not in the place to listen to this episode today, just be kind to yourself, be mindful, and I just wanted to give you a quick heads up before we get into today's episode. Today, Taylor and Kira also talk about orthorexia, and it's something that we've talked about a few times on our podcast that I just wanted to define really quick. It is a type of disordered eating where there is an unhealthy focus on eating a healthy way. If you have orthorexia, it's possible you obsess about this to a point that it can lead you to rejecting a variety of foods for not being quote unquote pure enough, clean enough, good enough, or even whole meals that don't meet the individual standard for what they should be eating. Some people only can eat things that they prepare for themselves, things like that. So I just wanted to give that some recognition, because I know Taylor has opened up about how she didn't even know that was a form of disordered eating until she was already kind of down the trap on it. And that kind of was what started her struggle that she'll talk more about today also. But I just wanted to define that really quick for you. Let's get into today's episode. I will bring on Taylor and Kira. Welcome back. And on the line now, we've got Taylor, myself, and Kira Hungerford from Kira Good Eats on Instagram. How are you doing today, Kira?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm doing really well. Thanks so much for joining us. I already told Taylor and Kira this, but I just really love your Instagram page, the facts you have. It's obviously from experience. And I love the fact that you're studying to be a nutritionist. So not only is it coming from areas of your experience being an athlete, but also the educational background. So I just want to start by saying I love what you do.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, Kira, before we start officially with today's interview, you told me kind of briefly how your senior season was impacted due to COVID this past year. And it's an unfortunate reality that athletes across the country are facing without really a blueprint or plan or anything. So can you tell me a little more about how COVID impacted you and how you're coping with that?
Yeah, I mean, this year has been a roller coaster. So my conference decided that we were only going to play like 22 games for the entire season. So it was cut down quite a bit from what the games that we usually take on during a regular season. So it kind of started right before our preseason did. My roommate got COVID, and even though I didn't, I still had to quarantine for the 14 days. So that was really hard because the gyms had just finally opened and we were all so excited to just like get back in there, start practicing. And unfortunately, I had to go back home and be in quarantine while everyone else was in the gym. So that was hard. But I came back just like with a positive mindset in the practices. And then it hit my team again right before our like first game. There's about five of us who got COVID, I being one of them. So we quarantined again and kind of just like we would roll with the punches. Like my team was really good at that, you know, just kind of like facing adversity, whatever it came our way. And, you know, we were having a really good season, and anytime like a team just like popped up and said like, you know, hey, like we tested positive, so we can't play, we'd immediately find the next game to play. So that was really fortunate for us to still, like we ended up playing 20 games total or 22 games total this year. So we were very fortunate in that aspect. However, March 1st, which was like still kind of within like my 120 days of testing positive. I had just started testing with the team again. And March 1st, I tested positive. And just like hearing my coach like say, like after I was like, is everything okay? Because she walked in with just like this like expression on her face. I was like, oh no, something's not okay. And she was like, I'm so sorry, like grab your things. And that was just like the biggest like punch in the gut, because I was like, there's no way, like not me, like I already had COVID. Like surely it's just like a mishap, I don't know what. And that whole week was just like a spiral of events and emotions and a lot of heartbreak. So that same day I got a PCR test and another antigen test, and it was like I was shaking and I was like so terrified for the results to come out. And I ended up getting another positive antigen test, and both my PCRs came back positive. So I missed out on the last two games of my senior season, which was like the most heartbreaking thing to me, because, you know, like I had just started like as a freshman and sophomore who didn't play at all. Like I slowly worked my way up to a starting position my senior year, which is like crazy for me to like think that that happened. And like I was like, wow, like the universe is like finally aligning. And then it just like tests me again. And yeah, I just felt so much sadness and heartbreak that week. And I really like spent the entire time in isolation, just like grieving like such a loss. And at first, like I was afraid like, oh, I'm just being over dramatic with it. But, you know, I think it really is grieving a loss, like the end of a career, the end of a life that we've known and like lived as athletes for our entire lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's something we talk about a lot, about the loss of identity when you retire from sports. And that was like, for me, really hard, but it was my choice. I got to do my senior night. I had a very successful senior season. So it's one of those things that like, it's the essentially ending it on an injury, but it's almost an internal injury illness. That's not like you saw it happen. It's not like you tore your ACL and you came down like, wow, this is it. And you had the moment to process it. It was like your coach coming in and telling you. I can't imagine. So, well, first of all, I'm really glad you're okay, that your recovery process and it went well. But again, that almost makes it like harder to cope with, of like, I'm sad I missed this, but I'm so happy I'm relieved. So like you can still mourn that things didn't go as planned and still be disappointed with, or still grateful.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And it's something that Taylor and I obviously haven't impacted because we're not playing here, but we get questions and posts and people sharing stories all the time. So we just want to try to normalize like the conversation around how COVID right now is kind of crazy and impacted. So when you mentioned that to me, I just definitely wanted to find out more about it. As well. But the reason why I really related to your page was because of the talk you have on your Instagram about disordered eating traps in women athletes and women in general. So I think this is something that's really topical, and we've talked about how prevalent disordered eating is in athletes. And you shared with me that you've suffered from an eating disorder as well. So can you tell me a little bit how you realized you had a problem that needed to be addressed and what the recovery process looked like for you?
Yeah, definitely. So I developed an eating disorder in high school. It kind of like took many forms. So I struggled with orthorexia, bulimia nervosa, and binge eating disorder. So there was a lot through my high school years and college years that I was struggling with something that was invisible to everyone else. And I kind of knew deep down that what my journey to health didn't feel right. And I was like so obsessed with my body and food. And I just like kind of knew that like, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel healthy. And it wasn't until like my sophomore year that I just like happened to have a class where if you saw like one of the therapists, you got extra credit. So I ended up going to her and we clicked and we talked about so many things. And she was actually specialized in eating disorders. So which is kind of why like I loved meeting with her so much, because she had helped me. And so I saw her for about like the rest of the semester of my sophomore year, and I thought I was okay. Going into the summer, I wasn't able to see her. And coming back my junior year, I ended up relapsing in my recovery. And part of that was because I had stopped meeting with her, and I had kind of listened to the disordered voice saying, like, you're fine. Like, you don't need her help. Like, I think you're fine. And in reality, I wasn't. I was falling back into the same patterns. And it just like made me believe that I couldn't live without my eating disorder, but also living with an eating disorder isn't living at all. So that was kind of my journey going through that.
I had, like, as soon as you said, and this might not be like the best thing to say, but as soon as you said you struggled with orthorexia and bulimia and binge eating disorder, BED, my ears and like heart just like perked up, not in like a way that's like, oh my God, like that's good, but in a way of like, I struggled with the exact same thing. And like, I don't often hear, or I don't often hear other people talk about bulimia, especially like as outspokenly. So thank you for sharing that. I know it's like really hard, to like, you know, say that in public. So I really appreciate that. And I guess like, were you a sophomore? So you were a sophomore in college or in high school when you went to go see the therapist?
A sophomore in college.
A sophomore in college. Okay. Got it. Got it. What was it like when you first started that journey, like your health journey? Cause you said you struggled with orthorexia, and that's where I struggled with primarily first too. So I'm just curious, like, was the journey, did it start off as like, okay, this is good, I'm feeling good. And then it kind of got like progressively more and more restrictive and kind of disordered, or what was your experience with starting on a health journey?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I guess I just kind of wanted to feel better when I was playing basketball, because I was just feeling very sluggish. I wasn't really eating a lot of foods that were giving me a lot of energy. And yeah, just didn't leave me feeling my best overall on the court. So I kind of looked into like, what are ways that I can be like healthier, like maybe adding more vegetables to my plate, this and that. And I honestly kind of got into an influencer trap. So someone unqualified reached out to me saying if I wanted to join their nutrition boot camp. And me being the naive, like health seeking athlete I was like, yeah, sure, I'd love to. And in that boot camp, the person basically said, I have to cut out all dairy, all gluten, all processed foods, all sugar. And that is so much food right there that like nourishes athletes and provide us with so much strength and energy. And just like taking all of that out, it just like, yeah, that's kind of how that orthorexia started, where I was becoming obsessed with the ingredients and the calories. And yeah.
Damn. It's so crazy how like that, and I feel like not a lot of people even know what orthorexia is. I remember Emily and I were talking about it like a few months ago or something. And like, it's not a common term that people know until you like suffer from it and it grows something else. But it really is, I feel like in a lot of ways, like the gateway kind of like disordered thinking that can lead into so many different eating disorders. And like, it definitely needs, like, that term needs to be on the radar of all sportswomen, I think, because there's so much of it in the sports industry and in the fitness world. It's just like, now that I know what orthorexia is, I see it everywhere. Are you like, do you see it
everywhere? Absolutely.
Everywhere. Like TikToks, like what I eat in a day, orthorexia. Oh my gosh, yes. Like, there's so much orthorexia everywhere. And like, so many people don't even know what it is. Rant over.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. And I think it's also really susceptible. I mean, in general, everywhere, but like you guys said, to athletes, as you're trying to think about ways to fuel your body, you hear a nutritionist, you're not really thinking about balancing your diet. Like really nutritionists is the, like, to just a layman, if you didn't know better, if you're like, oh, I have to see a nutritionist because I'm unhealthy, because I'm eating, quote unquote, bad food. I'm eating quote unquote, unclean, all these kind of harmful words that are describing food and putting this connotation that just shouldn't be there. So if you could go back to sophomore year, Kira, when you were trying to figure out what, you know, do I have a problem? I need to change something, to junior year of like, okay, this is getting overwhelmed again. Like, what would you tell an athlete who was in that discovery phase or, you know, fighting through recovery as an athlete?
Yeah, I guess in the like both ways, I would say, you know, all foods fit. Like, you can still prioritize your sleep, your recovery, you know, like having a balanced meal, but also enjoying foods that are fun. And I think oftentimes, like in the media and while we're in the eating disorder, we demonize so many foods. And honestly, that restriction makes it even like we put it on a pedestal, and that restriction has so much hold over us. And it just makes us want that food even more. And stressing over that like cookie or that candy is causing your body more harm than actually eating it and moving on.
I think that's great and powerful to remember. And it's easier said than done when you're out of the situation. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that's really good, like grounding information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that like reverse psychology effect, right? Like if you tell someone they can't touch it, then it's like, ooh, I want it even more. But if you like open up and you're like, hey, like, you know, be free, do whatever you want, whenever you want, when it comes to food, then it's like, you're less likely to binge if like you have been restricting those foods.
Definitely.
I'm curious, Kira, is there anything you can think of? Like, did you find it help? Like, how much did your coaches know about what you were going through? Teammates? Was there anything that a teammate or coach or athletic trainer did that you found to be particularly helpful, either in action or language they used with you?
So yeah, my coaches and teammates were so supportive. And honestly, I did not tell any of them until my junior year when I relapsed. And I mean, it took me forever to tell my parents. And I think I only told one or two friends, like even after like 3 years of struggling with it. So that's like the thing about like, you know, opening up can be so hard. But once you do, you realize that you do have a support system. And you know, finding that one friend that you can confide in, but also there are other people like on the staff that are there to help you. And honestly, it wasn't me who opened up to my coaches about it. There was the night during my relapse that I just completely broke down, and my roommates were so confused, and I was just kind of inconsolable. And, you know, they told the coach the next day, and I was kind of upset. I felt kind of betrayed because I was so afraid of what my coaches would think about me struggling with an eating disorder and my mental health. And the thought of it just like terrified me so much. But looking back, I'm so glad that they did, because I wouldn't have been able to get the help and support that I needed without them.
Also, like one thing that I think a lot of student athletes don't realize, if they are in the thick of an eating disorder, is that a lot of the time there are resources available to you on campus for free that might not be there once you graduate. So it really is, you know, a blessing to be an athlete and, you know, be struggling with this versus like being out of college, not having like health insurance, like you're at the beginning of your career, not knowing like what immediate resources are available to you. I'm curious, how was it working with like the sports dietitian and athlete help advisors like on your campus through your eating disorder? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so actually, and unfortunately, I don't have a sports dietitian on my campus, and I don't believe many or any Division II schools have one, which is really unfortunate. And I really hope that, you know, like there starts to be more of an emphasis in sports dietetics through all levels of college athletics, because I believe it's so important. And yeah, in that case, I actually went to an eating disorder clinic where I did like an outpatient meeting with a registered dietitian there. And My therapist, however, was free through, like, there was like a GA program at my school where you were able to meet with like the students and, you know, they kind of build their hours of experience. So that's where I found my therapist who was working in eating disorder recovery.
That's awesome that you were able to find those resources. And that's one of the things that, you know, we've talked more and more about, that students oftentimes don't realize the resources that are available to them. And mm-hmm. also identifying, like we've said it before, that like Taylor and I had a nutritionist available to us, and we understand that's a privilege. Like it's really unfortunate that, I mean, every single school has a coach, every single school has some type of sports med, but yet this nutritionist, which is impacting so many women, just are kind of missing right now. I really related to something you said earlier about like being so afraid to tell everyone. I had mental health issues, and I didn't want all my friends or my coaches to see me as like weak and just to like mm-hmm. fully see me as my depression. I didn't want them to just like look at me and feel pity. I didn't want them to look at me and see broken. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to invite you on our podcast, because I want people to know they are more than their depression. They are more than their eating disorder. Like your friends are supporting you, not because you have an eating disorder, but because they love you. Your coaches want to see you succeed, not because you can be the winner starter on your basketball team, but rather because they care about you as a person. And just to remind athletes everywhere that, you know, you are not your problems. You are not your thoughts. There's so much more to you. So I was hoping that you could give some tips on some reminders or, you know, validate that experience even of separating your eating disorder from Kira as the person to identify that.
Yeah, definitely. Like I agree with everything that you said. And it was actually one of these quotes that my coach sent me that just like really hit home. She sent it to me while I was dealing with COVID for the second time, but it also really resonated with what I was struggling with, an eating disorder. So the quote like went something like, when something bad happens, you can either let it define you, destroy you, or let it strengthen you. And that just like really hit home because, you know, I did let that eating disorder destroy me for a couple years, but I didn't want it to be like something that, you know, just like kind of like had a name tag on, you know. I honestly didn't think that I'd be able to like open up about my eating disorder either. So it's almost like I flipped the script and I let it empower me in the sense that like I went through that struggle and it did strengthen me and I did become a different but better person on the outside of it. And you know, just because you struggled with something doesn't mean that that is you. Like you have to stay in this box of what that was.
And I feel like all three of us here can relate to the fact that like some of the hardest things that we've gone through in life regarding our mental health, Emily, depression, me, bulimia, Kira, BED, bulimia, orthorexia, whatever it is, like those are all things that we are now using to empower women. And like, mm-hmm. and we're using like those things that broke us to lift people up. And there's something really cool in that. And I don't know, you reminded me of that when you said, you know, our hardships, they can destroy us, they can define us, or we can use them to get better.
And I think it's important too to remember, like if you're listening and thinking these things, it's very easy. And I know I felt this too, that this does define me. Like if I talk about this, I'm a failure. Like the fact I'm even having these thoughts, I'm a failure. Everyone's going to hate me. Everyone's going to think that it's an easy fix. They're not genuinely going to understand what I'm going through. These are all like very real fears that were mm-hmm. immediately alleviated once I was able to open it up. And, you know, when I hear Kira talk, when I hear Taylor talk, when I hear all the sports women in our communities talk and open up about their problems, I think of strength. Like I hear someone being brave to come forward with these things. And like, this is my first time meeting you, Kira, but like, I'm like, I am proud of you. I, you know, feel like you're doing great. I feel like I could support you with anything. And that's from someone I don't know. So I just want to know that, like, even if you don't have someone that you consider a best friend, if you don't have a perfect relationship with your coach, if your family dynamic is a little weird and you don't think your parents will get it, I will say, like, give human nature the benefit of the doubt. You know, you can even ask them not to say anything, because they may, like, I remember when I first told my parents, I said, please don't say anything right now. I just have to tell you something. Don't respond, because I wasn't ready for, like, their gut reaction. And I wanted to give them time to think. I didn't want them to say something that might crumble my confidence when I finally opened up. So I would encourage you, if you're having a hard time, like, what really worked for me is, like, if you hear me talking about this, if you hear Kira talking about this, you hear Taylor talking about this, and, like, if you don't think that we are weak and we're failures, like, that's how people will see you. And just, you know, try to find one person. It doesn't have to be someone you're super close to, but one person that you respect as a human, and let, you know, give human goodness a chance to shine.
Yeah. I love how you put that. And yeah, like, probably asking for help is one of the strongest things that you can do. And it is our mind playing those games that, like, makes us believe that we're weak for going through this, we're weak for asking for help, but that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And so I guess for takeaways for people listening, and I guess I'll ask this to you, Taylor, too, since this is something that you've struggled, but Kira, let's start with you. Do you have any tips or advice that you found, like, for your own personal journey that helped you while you were struggling with your eating disorder, either the first time or after you relapsed to even now, that has helped you?
Yeah, I think reminders is very important to me, like, reminding myself that, you know, I am more than a body, and my body is the least interesting thing about me. And I don't need to be a certain size in order to be a great athlete. And I think also it's not just about what your body consumes, but what your mind consumes. So by following registered dietitians and, like, body positive influencers who believe in health at every size and intuitive eating, I think that really helped me a lot, because I would see that on my feed, and it would be kind of like an internal reminder that you know, you are, yeah, exactly. Like, you are not your struggles. You are more than your eating disorder, and you are more than a body.
Yeah. I think that's something that people don't really give it credit for. It's not you that's, like, you may have these thoughts coming in, but your eating disorders, like, that is not your value. That is not your worth as a human. Just because you're having these thoughts, that is your depression. That is your eating disorder. That is your enter other mental health. Like, that is not you as a person. And it's not something that you're doing wrong. That does not define your worth on this earth. Taylor, what helped you in your recovery process the most?
Yeah. I mean, like what Kira just said, in terms of, like, watching what I consume through my eyes and what I listen to, I think that's huge. And in following, like, health at every size accounts and BOPO accounts and, you know, whatever, like, fitness inclusive accounts, all of these different accounts, like, I've definitely found that just getting more educated on, like, diet culture and thin idealism and, like, going back to, like, the roots of these issues and, like, understanding just, like, even the culture behind diet culture and, like, the culture behind diet culture, like, you know, the intention behind diet culture more so, and, you know, how it's so wrapped up in, like, this patriarchal system, how it's meant to shrink women down. That to me has just given me so much, it's just been such an eye opener, because I can now be like, well, wait, like, I want to lift women up. I want to lift myself up. I don't want to shrink myself down. And, like, in participating in this culture, like, I am literally doing that. So just, like, gaining more awareness there. And then going back to the, like, asking for help thing, the first person I told about, like, my bulimia and binge eating was my best friend, Skylar. And that was, like, the first person I, you know, decided I'd open up to. And after that, things just got so much easier for me, because I could, once you say it, and maybe Kira, you've had this experience too, like, once you say it out loud, like, I have a problem and, like, I'm sick, it's like something inside me click and clicked and it was like, okay, now I should probably go get help. But yeah, as long as definitely. I kept it in, it was just kind of like suppressed, like kind of like, mm-hmm. I've got it under control. And like,
yeah.
Do you have it under control after like 3.5 years? Probably not. Like, so yeah.
Yeah, I think speaking it into existence can definitely help because, and that's part of the reason why here at Virago Project, we're trying to end some of the stigma around this, because if someone came out and said like, hi, I have cancer, no one's going to say, just get over it. No one's going to say like, yeah. Oh, you need to just deal with that. Or like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. You like you're too healthy to have cancer. You don't look like you have cancer. Like no one says those things. So we need to encourage that same conversation to start in the mental health and all these invisible illness spaces in general, where the diagnosis looks different, the treatment looks different. And that as well. I also love both of your points on, you know, what you're consuming. I grew up with very strict parents, like not until I was out in college, like was I watching R-rated movies, and I never really understood it because I was like, hey, I'm mature. Like I am a good kid. I'm not like, just because I see someone with a gun doing an auto Grand Theft Auto doesn't mean that I'm going to do these things. But, you know, my parents had an interesting, you know, point that I didn't understand till like years later, but it's like, your thoughts aren't your thoughts. Your thoughts are like what you surround yourself in thoughts. Your thoughts are your community's thoughts. Your thoughts are culture's thoughts. So were they a little intense? Yes. But like the message is there. Like if you're if you're only seeing on your feed a skinny ab tee, whatever, all this stuff, and you're seeing these types of talks about, like you said, Taylor, the what I eat in a day, or you know, these just how to frame your plate with the correct macro thing, why you cut out carbs, like those thoughts, like you may not never have thought like, oh, what could cutting dairy do for me? But like all of a sudden you see someone who says how they changed their life by cutting out carbs and dairy. And then now all of a sudden these thoughts become your own. What, no matter what you do, your thoughts are controlled by what's around you.
Like plants a seed.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, Kara, what was your experience with, like, was there a teammate or someone when you were in high school and started showing like symptoms of orthorexia? Or sorry, did you start were your symptoms prevalent, like showing up in high school, or was it more so during college?
Yeah, it was high school, mainly orthorexia. And then like it also with a mix of both BED and bulimia.
Okay. And so when those symptoms started to onset, like, or right before they began to onset, what, like, where do you think the seed was planted? Like, was it in what you were consuming? Did you have teammates who would like talk about their bodies, or like, was someone like close to you showing like obsessive, like behaviors and thoughts around food? Do you have any idea like where exactly, or kind of where it came from?
Yeah, I think it kind of came from a little bit of all those places, especially from the what I was consuming. So like by following this influencer's special diet that was designed to make you like be healthy, but also lose weight, which cut out of everything. I think that's where it really started to grow. And yeah, I definitely did have teammates who would talk about their body, or like I wish that XYZ was smaller, et cetera. And I did have who I ended up opening up to, like my very first friend. She also opened up to me saying that she was struggling with an eating disorder around the same time. So it was nice for both of us to kind of like have someone to talk to and relate to, but it also didn't help that both of us were stuck in this toxic cycle.
Oh gosh. I can see that being like a blessing and also like, yeah, this vicious cyclical thing. Mm-hmm. Because the other thing too is like, if you hang out with people who are constantly participating in diet culture and talking about, then like, it's just going to permeate itself even more so.
Oh yeah.
In your life, which is hard.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really hard, and it's, so for someone who's never suffered from an eating disorder, after having these conversations with Taylor and people like you, Kira, it's like eye-opening and shocking how much, because I'm trying to be like, you know, as much as I can be, I guess ally might be the right word to anyone, like just because I can, like, I might be thinking that I wish my thighs were smaller, that does, by putting those words into there, like, I don't know who that's hurting. I now have a daughter. I don't want to be that person, even though that's not something I struggle with. It's not necessarily, well, I'll argue it isn't healthy for me to say those things for my own self because I shouldn't, but it is more harmful, or it could be more harmful to people that I'm in the locker room with, the people that I'm texting, the people in my group chat, the people that are on Facebook or social media. So I think that's a good reminder too, of people who are like, hey, this episode's not for me. I have no clue what you're talking about. I'm sorry you have an eating disorder, but that's frankly not my problem. It's like a culture thing. Like, since we've started this, I've heard friends talk about juice cleanses. I've heard people, like, very healthy people that I, you know, look up to, that are talking about their body in a negative way, about these diet cultures. It's everywhere. So I think if you can bring awareness, and people can start being on the lookout for, hey, these things, this may not trigger something for you and send you down a spiral, but this may for other people. Just talking about these things ever serve a place in anyone's vocabulary? Is this really helping? Like, is it helping you lose weight? Maybe, but at the end of the day, you still have to look at, like, is that really what's healthy for you? And, like, it just has to have a whole shift in mindset from everyone, whether they have an eating disorder or not, that we have to just take a look at the relationship we have with food as a society, no matter where you fall on. We've talked about in previous episodes, like, a spectrum of disordered eating. Like you may not be, you might not have an eating disorder, but just because you don't have a eating disorder doesn't mean these thoughts are healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, kind of piggybacking off of what you say, like, that almost kind of fuels their eating disorder even more. Like, if you say, you look so great, you look like you've lost weight, that just fuels that cycle even more. You're like, okay, great. Like, it is working. I'm so close to the perfect body, which doesn't exist.
Yeah. Woo. Listen, when I was at the height of my eating disorder, I had people tell me all the time, like, you look so good. That is like the, for someone who is struggling with an eating disorder, it like, that is the ultimate affirmation that, like, what you're doing needs to continue going on. And what I was doing was, like, throwing up after my meal, like, you know, like, that was not healthy. But someone saying, like, wow, like, you look amazing. You just never know. Like, you never know what someone's going through. So just don't say anything at all. Like if you wanted to give a compliment, compliment someone's, like, character, compliment someone's outfit. Like, don't compliment their body. Just don't do it. It's safer. Don't do it.
Absolutely.
That is, Kira, all the questions I had for you today. Just in this space, is there anything else you think I missed that you want to give as a message to sportswomen in general about health, athletics, or their food journey?
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure if I hit on it already, but, like, when I say that you don't need to look a certain way to be a great athlete is so true. Like, you all, like, might be in the same sport as your teammates, but even if you ate the same things, you still wouldn't look like the next person, which body diversity is such an amazing thing. But that's where, like, I know it's often that, like, many athletes, especially female athletes, will look to the teammate next to them and be like, why don't I look like her? Like, what does she do? I need to find out so then I can have a body just like her. But in reality, whatever your body is right now is amazing and can do so many things. So you don't need to change it or shrink it for it to be beautiful.
That's, yeah, that's everything. That's it. Took the cake.
Mic
also
drop.
You don't want to suffer the repercussions of trying to shrink your body later on. And you don't want to suffer trying to shrink your body, like, pulling you out of your sport or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just exactly. Not worth it. So yeah.
Yeah. And with depression, and I would imagine eating disorders, I'm not sure exactly if this is the statistic on that, but the longer you're in it, right, the longer hole you dig, the longer you're going to take out of it. So, like, today is a great day to you know, stop the descent. Today is a great day, like, to stop comparing yourself to do all that. So thank you so much, Kira. Can you let our listeners know where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can follow me at Kira's Good Eats on Instagram. And yeah.
She's got awesome content.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. We'll tag you in the description below as well.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you, Kira, so much for this conversation. We had a great time learning and discussing with you. We will be in touch. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, anytime.